So as a joke, I'd like to say, Chris, like, welcome to the Decoded Podcast. And then 2 seconds later, thanks for coming to the Decoded Podcast.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what we're going to talk about today because we talked last night.
Feels like the after party. That's what I'm kind of hanging. Yeah. No, it's just update all y'all who are listening. So got a chance to go and hang with Roland. Had some good barbecue and some good conversation. Props to, hey, this is where we get the sponsorship plug. Props to the Lank.
Wouldn't it be awesome if, you know, what I thought about is actually eating my leftover brisket on the podcast.
It's up in the fridge. My fridge just smells like smells like the smoking section of a, or somebody's car that's just like had a lifetime of smoking cigarettes in it. You know? Yeah. That's some smoky brisket. So it's the Lancaster. So shape it if you want. Somebody might care. I did. No, it was delicious.
Nobody's going to care.
I know. It's our show. I think that's where we landed last night, Parksley. It's our show. We're going to do what we want.
A big shout out to Brad for Brad Schreffler.
Yeah.
For, you know, throwing out there that we do a podcast for no one's interest.
Anyone's interest.
But it's like, no, this is our podcast. This is what we're doing. So we're going to start with a little bit of barbecue talk.
Sounds good.
It was epic to get to hang out with you last night. It was good food, good people. I noticed that your beard is clean. All the grease is out.
So, for the full effect there, I don't know. You could check out probably on your Twitter feed or Insta or my Insta. There's pictures of the art project that was my beard yesterday. It had to do, we'll just leave it at this. It, you know, bells and the color green. And there was an outfit that went along with it. Maybe I'll talk about that just as a little social experiment. What that sort of the bigger picture, apart from just the dad style ridiculousness that I was rocking yesterday. Really?
Well, let's start there. Let's start there because let's connect it right to our work.
Okay.
So I dressed up my beard on Tuesday, and I thought it went really well. The kids loved it. We went from, we read to 3 classes, and I made a clear connection between the story I was reading and my beard, which was decorated similar to the character in the story. And my kids loved it. And I don't think if people at work were weirded out by it, they didn't really make it known. I got a lot of people that said, that's awesome, way to go. The best response I got, or the most interesting response was from the parents outside, because I do a morning duty in the parking lot. So when the buses come in, I move the sign, the buses come in, and the parents come in that way. They walk in with their kids. And of all the regular parents that I see, I would say like the majority of them made a comment and it was positive. Like, wow, way to go getting into the spirit. Holy cow, the kids are going to love that. Merry Christmas. Thanks for being festive. Like, it brought a smile to people's face, and whether the smile was because they thought it was awesome or because they thought it was ridiculous, didn't matter to me. They were smiling. And at this point in the game, it's really good to see smiles on people's faces. That was my experience. And it wasn't so much a social experiment because I had done it last year. It's just, I'll do it if I can. But I think your experience was or has been a little bit different. So I'll let you step it up and talk about it.
So let's go in reverse order. I'll go in reverse order with it because, you know, when I showed up, so we kind of met up in the parking lot at the Lank, and, you know, I'm still rocking my green beard and little jingle bells hanging from it, which at every move, like all day long, here's the one side effect. I felt like I was being chased by cats because every little move would create a little jingle. So I'll get back to that too as well. So I step out of the car. I'm like, dude, you know, I came right from work. And I mean, you're nonplussed. You're like, hey, whatever. And we just kind of went into a conversation. And it's funny. There's a little bit of inside the bubble, outside the bubble action going on. So as we're walking up to the restaurant and walking in, the moments that my ridiculousness was that when it was sort of sparking up in other people, like the double takes and who I can only imagine. I would love to have seen me with somebody else's eyes. And, you know, we got a table, you know, a couple of people dropped by, quite a few people, like getting some stares. And we're sitting there just doing our thing, eating barbecue, catching up, having great conversation. And you sort of look over and someone's staring right at me and I get a little thumbs up and people stop by the table. Great beer, buddy. Even got that picture with like someone, you know, like a parent of, I forget the exact story, the parent of a former student or something.
My wife taught her daughter.
Yeah. I think she staffed there. So she worked there. Took a picture with me and the beard was getting a lot of positive vibes last night. And even, you know, so then I'll go in reverse order. So I'm driving to your neck of the woods and heading down the 401, and you sort of get the sense like someone's looking at you. You just kind of get that feel. So, you know, I check my nine and I look over and there's like a kid looking out the window at me and my green beard. And I kind of look back and, you know, just do a little peace sign and keep on driving. And then again, thinking about what it would be like to see with his eyes, like going down the highway and you look over and there's some dude in a toque and a green beard with bells hanging from it. Go back again, and now I'm back at school. And I have this moment as I'm leaving school asking myself, do I try and hustle? Because it was going to be an hour and change to drive from where my school was to where we were going to meet up. So I was thinking, you know, am I going to try and get cleaned up after school? Am I going to change back into, because I had like an outfit. There was like a t-shirt and a vest and all that kind of festive stuff that I'd been wearing yesterday at school. And I had a moment where I thought, do I clean this out? And I told a few friends that, you know, I'm heading right out, going to be, you know, going for a drive and going out for dinner. They're like, you're going to get cleaned up, right? I'm like, you know what? I don't know. I might just rock this right into the evening. So I had that moment where I was thinking about, what it kind of came down to is, do I transition back into my plain clothes? And it's funny. So this new school that I'm at, I feel like it's getting in my head a little bit in a way that maybe my former schools didn't, or maybe I just didn't notice. I find myself sort of connecting and acting and playing more with who I am as an educator. And I mentioned when we were talking last night, saying in the past I would have easily thought, well, when I leave work, I have to kind of shift out of my work persona to become Chris again. And as we're sitting there last night, a little bit of an aha moment, you know, when we're talking, I say, well, maybe the green beard and the bells in the beard is actually my true persona. Maybe that's the persona that, you know, somehow gets amplified when I'm in the teaching space. And I don't really celebrate it in the same way when I'm no longer in the teaching space. And the equivalent of, you know, you get home and take off your work clothes and put on your comfy clothes or whatever. Like you sort of create these spaces between I'm only this person in this space and I'm only this person in another space. So a little bit of the social experiment, I will admit, was how will I feel being out in public wearing this outfit that normally is fairly well received inside of a school. There were a whole lot of people that were like, dude, what have you done? Like, what, like, is that? So one, I didn't tell you this part. So yesterday morning, I'm standing in line at Walmart before school. I had to pick up a few last minute kind of chocolatey things. And I was cooking with two of my classes. So I was picking up the ingredients first thing. So this is like 7 a.m. in the morning, the Walmart that's right near the school. So at that time I'm wearing the outfit. The beard is dyed. I don't have the bells in it yet. Was going to put that on at school, and I'm standing in line, and so first off, I ran into one of my colleagues and it kind of blew her mind. She's like, what are you doing? What have you done? Now this individual, actually I say Katarina, like she cracks me up. Like there's just so much comedy and we sort of play off each other. She's one of the EAs in my community classroom. So we're constantly cracking off and having a good time. So she often will be picking stuff up. And, you know, as I'm walking in the Walmart, I'm thinking to myself, I kind of wanted just to surprise people with the look. As I'm walking in the Walmart, I'm like, I bet you I'm going to run into her, because I always do. So she's in one of the aisles and just happens to turn, and it's like, oh my God, Clough, what have you done? And I can hear her laughing, and I go off and I do my thing. So we end up back in the checkout line again, and it's her, she's ahead of me. I think she was ahead of me, but it was staggered, and there's a dude between us and then me. I just forget. I think she was ahead, or it was because it was folded. She was one sort of aisle over. Does that make sense? Like the line kind of snaked. So anyways, dude turns around, he looks at me, he's like, whoa, nice beard. I'm like, thanks, man. He goes, is it natural? So you'd have to check out the feed to see the actual color, because as you kind of called out, it was grinchy green. Like, it was just like brilliant grinchy green. And I just, I don't even get a chance to laugh or respond it before I can hear it like a couple hours over, like, natural. And it's like my colleague cracking off on it. So I had this idea, like I should, I knew that I would enjoy dressing up like that at the school, because there's a spirit at the school that's starting to get in. I wondered about whether or not, because there's a whole lot of the teachers there that do stuff like that, like they get into it. And so I started to wonder to myself, how much of that is me? Because in the past, I would have made that like a, like it's a work project. And when I'm no longer at work, I could take off the outfit, take off the uniform. The one thing that was interesting throughout the day at the school, two interesting things. I don't think this whole beard decorating thing is, I don't think it's a thing at, it's not, it wasn't a thing at my high school. And there were several bearded people there that were just, never thought to do that. The second part of it is that the kids, like they loved it. Like they were cracking up, like the kids, these posses of just stern, serious looking, gotta hold it together, 16-year-olds cruising down the hall. And I come around the corner, and I've got this red vest on and this ridiculously decorated t-shirt and my beard green, and it's jingling the whole way. And they can't keep their coolness anymore. They crack. And it just takes one to start smiling and like, oh my God, did you see that guy's beard? Oh my God. You see? And then they're like, what did he do? You just get the chatter and some laughter and like, you know, sir, cool beard, that nice job. And it's funny because those moments I've noticed before at high school, but I started to realize like how, I don't want to say how important, because it's going in the wrong direction, but I'm going to say when you start to notice that type of play in school, you start to realize how much you crave that type of play at school. And I was happy to pull the sort of ridiculous dad card, because there's a funny thing there, eh? Like I do ridiculous stuff like that all the time with my own kids, and starting to do a little bit of stuff like that at work, I don't know, I found a kind of a sweet spot of harmony. I'll do it again. Some of my colleagues said they're going to start, you know, with a little bit of dedication, growing their beard out. We're going to set up a little maker space. It'd be like the ed tech. It'd be that like the ed tech conferences where they give you your name tag and they give you all the stickers and the markers to bling them up, except we're just going to have a table with like little hair clips and glitter and lights, do it upright. Everyone's going to grow a beard for Christmas next year. So
that would be rad.
Totally
rad.
That's my beard story.
That's your beard story. It's a good one.
Mm. And part of what's wrapped all around this and was the, you know, I was wondering, one, whether or not, and I'll say this sort of, if I could push through into the bravery just to keep wearing it all day, because I realized that's what was a little bit going on there. It's like, it was one thing to be goofy and courageous in the school when it was held inside the teacher bubble, but could I bring that teacher side out? And I think that was the bigger reflection here. There was some conversation on Twitter this past week about, is teaching actually making you a better person? Because I think there's a lot of things that I do for myself personally that improves my teaching. I feel like often that's the flow, more so than not. My personal wellness scaffolds my professional effectiveness. Like it creates the skeleton for it, and it fortifies it. And this was a notable moment where I actually felt, I really did feel like my teacher bravery made my personal life better. And I don't know if I have a lot of moments like that where I connect those dots, but that's what the blinged out beard did. So.
Is it okay if I shift? I feel like I'm going to do an abrupt shift.
Do it.
Are we good with the social experiment?
Absolutely.
Okay. I feel like you hit a lot. You hit on a lot of good things there. And you know my opinion about the real self. We talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
In our major on ramp. Anyway, okay. So here's the shift. I'm shifting to the fact that many people yesterday wished us a Merry Christmas, not Happy Holidays, Merry Christmas. And I have to tell you, I was good with that. And let me preface that with, so yesterday before school, I went to Timmy's and I got some treats for my kids. And you know, several people in that line driving from like the order station to the window, I got several Merry Christmases. So I was inundated yesterday with strangers wishing me a Merry Christmas. Usually, I don't feel like that's the case. Usually it's the Happy Holidays that I get. I've been intentional this season in saying Merry Christmas to people because I celebrate Christmas. And I know that not everybody does. But I do, and I'd like to honor my tradition and the tradition of many people that I know. And so it's not to say that I'm trying to be exclusive. It's just meant to say that if you want to wish me happy holidays, that's awesome. I'm not going to push back because that's where you're coming from. But if I want to wish you a Merry Christmas, are you going to push back? So I just thought it was interesting because you were getting a lot of play with the beard. People were coming over saying hello, hey, thank you. People were actually coming up to you and saying, they do this thing. It was really cool from my perspective.
I was going to ask you about this because I felt at some point, and maybe this is the perspective shift. I felt at some point you were more aware of what was going on in relation to the beard than I was, you know, like it was only, I think probably the bulk of the room, let's say even at the restaurant, was behind me. Like we were sort of there was only one table that was sort of not all that busy, but there was a lot of others around us. Sorry, man, jump in. But it was something that occurred to me, whether or not your perspective, like being able to see the impact of my ridiculousness that I couldn't even notice.
I was perfectly seated. I was perfectly seated. I could see people from my left and my right looking at you and pointing at you. At one point, there was a lady and she had three kids with her and she was snaking through the restaurant and she, part of her path was to come right behind you. And she grabbed the kid that was first in line and said, look, 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 look at him. Christmas, look at him. And then after the third kid looked, she looked at me and gave me like a smile and a nod, like this is awesome. And you were talking serious, so I wasn't going to be like, hey, hold up. But I saw a lot of that. People would walk past me and they pass you and then they turn their heads. So I was getting all that. I saw a lot of that. And I was very aware of it because it was very Grinchy green. Like you could have You could, if you didn't have the bells in it and you had a wig on, you could have been the Grinch easily. Like, it was one or the other type of thing. And I just thought it was great that people were feeling good. People, I don't know how many people, at least half a dozen, at Timmy's and at the Lank told you, they said, thank you. I love this. It brought a smile to my face. And I thought, oh my God, all you did was dye your beard green and put on some bells, and it made a, oh, that's the stuff, eh?
Yeah, I was gonna say, well, that's just, I'm looking at the colors. I'm just kind of doing some jot notes here. I'm like, yeah, it was kind of that green.
So, I mean, that was, it's so good to see people in a good mood.
Yeah.
I got to throw this in. On Tuesday, my beard was a little bit decorated before I left home. And as I'm driving to work, at red lights, people weren't paying attention to me. And that's cool. Everybody's doing their thing. But at one red light, I looked over and I noticed that the guy to my left, his back tire was really low. Like, stupid low. He shouldn't have been driving. So I lowered my window and stuck my head out the window because he wasn't looking at me. He was in the zone. He looks at me and then he's got this like look of shock. Like, what the hell is that guy wearing? Drops his window and is like just looking at me like with a look of surprise. I'm like, dude, your tire's really low. You should really fix that. Goes, oh, thanks. I'm like, Merry Christmas. And I just hit the gas and drive away. And I look in my side view mirror and he's still like in shock. And then when I got to school, I realized that the left-hand side of my beard was a lot more decorated than the right-hand side of my beard. But anyway, so good stuff. Good on you. I'm glad that you did it. It would be awesome if we could mobilize people with beards that could hold that stuff in it.
I like it. Mobilize.
Let's mobilize it. Like, yeah. We could even create kits. I know you guys are going to do a starter thing at your school, but I'm elementary. So maybe we could, I could buy a bunch of stuff, put kits together and sell it not for profit so that people could buy the beard kit and then just go with the flow.
Didn't you one year let the kids decorate?
No, last year it was the kindergarten teachers. It was the kindergarten teachers and their crew that was responsible for it. And I thank them for that. I mean, those two educators are in the spirit. They're really good kindergarten teachers because they're constantly looking at what's happening in the world and how can we bring this to the kids and how can we make it fun for the kids. And that's what kindergarten is, in my opinion. So when they said to me, hey, are you willing to do it? I'm like, I'm in. They're like, okay, we'll take care of everything else. Like, they got all the materials. I just had to show up and go into the room and get done up. And I'm thankful for that because it is so funny because of that. I feel like now I'm equipped. I can do it and I have a story to go with it. And it's like, it's this like little show. It's like a traveling show, if you will. And I enjoy it. And my students this year really enjoyed it. And I feel like my students this year enjoyed it more than my students last year. Because my students this year, a lot of them are newcomers. So I don't think they're exposed to this type of thing from where they come from. I think now that they're here and they're in school and they're seeing like what happens in school and stuff, I think it's just it's kind of cool that I could add a little bit to their schema that wasn't there before in kind of a really cool way. That's how I see it. I don't know if they would agree or not, but I just feel like it added some joy, and this was the week that I think really needed that. So I'm going to shift again, and I'm going to shift to my position this week at school, the week before a two-week break, was to be really aware of my students and to really open my eyes to any behaviors that, you know, were kind of not as prominent before this week, and looking for students who maybe had a little bit more anxiety than usual because of this week. And the reason why I'm aware is because I've worked at several schools where we were told by admin, like, this is going to be a rough week in terms of there's lots of things happening. So hold the line, maintain the regular routines as best as you can, and be aware that this place is a safe place for people, that the structure we offer here doesn't necessarily happen when students aren't here. So keep that in mind. Be kind, be positive, but also do your best to stick to your routines so that the kids are continuing to do what they normally do. And I took that to heart this year. And I'm not going to get into the depth of why and how and what's led me here, but it's kind of cool to sit back and to think that I have, you know, 16 years of teaching experience under my belt, and I'm finally awakened in a way that I've never really been woke before. And I feel really good about that. I feel a little bit sad about that I was never able to kind of pick it up the way it was meant to be picked up before. But I'm happy it's here, and I'm thankful that I was able to transition my head into the game. And I have to say, from my view, it was a really good week, generally speaking, because I don't know if it's because of what I did, but it was a good week. It was, in one of my reflections, I said that it was the best week that I could remember before a two-week break. And it's funny because it's the best week, but I'm in a school where I have a lot of students who are not traditionally exposed to what we were doing this week. So it's kind of that that yin and the yang. Like I have kids that are totally out of the loop and yet were able to get through without too much difficulty. And then the flip side is I've had kids who are totally used to Christmas routine and what this entails and are like off the walls. Like I had to peel them off the walls at the end of the day on Friday for them to go home because they're just out of control. What does that look like in secondary for you? I know that, I don't know if people are wishing each other a Merry Christmas as they leave your building. I don't know. At my school, it's Jesus is the reason for the season. So we make that clear. It's right up front. It's what we do. So I would love to hear about your experience of this week. And I know that you work on the fringe in education. You're working with students. Well, I'm going to let you tell us about that. But I see myself more of a mainstream classroom teacher. And I know you've talked about being on the fringe. So I'd like you to kind of elaborate there if that's where your end takes you.
I like that you brought that back. That's an old mindset that I used to really kind of put that out, that vibe out first, and in regard to my context. And I think the longer that I've thought about it, the sort of the more it sat with me, I almost feel like I have to shape it a little bit. And what I mean by that is, I think my interests in education, my interests kind of push me to the edges of what's going on in education, whether it's the technology or just the different career options, or, you know, the theoretical stuff like changing habits and taking chances. Like I sort of, let's say, look outside the mainstream for inspiration. And I think I said to you, there's a large, I have a disproportionate amount of things that inspire me for education that have nothing to do with education. Like I'm always looking outside of EDU to make my EDU better. And I think a second layer to that I didn't really have a clear sense of initially when I was talking about that, because I think there was something like there was a little bit of a bragginess to it, that somehow I'm existing in spaces that somehow, you know, I should be complimented, or like, oh, cool. Like, yeah, that's awesome. Like I was setting up that context of a conversation of, oh, I'm so happy that, you know, that you're doing that, and that's valuable work, and it's awesome that you're there. It's so necessary. Like that was sort of like the responses to it. And I think I would think to myself, oh, I must be on the right track. If other people think that it's valuable work, it must be on the right track. And I started to get to a place where, and just to shape that for anyone that's just listening. So I've been in guidance and special education and alternative education. and also worked with students on suspension and expulsion. And right now I'm in an autism and ASD community classroom working with the kids on life skills, but healthy eating and culinary. I'm trying to build this program at the high school that I'm at. And I've started to realize that my interest may be on the fringe, but I want my kids to be brought into the mainstream. And I'm starting to realize the sort of the paradox of that in the past, because I think there was something in me existing with the kids on whatever this edge of education that we could identify outside the mainstream or outside the big school. I've come to understand that what I'm really trying to do is to get the main school and the kids back in a relationship again. And I can remember so when I was hired, so the way the hiring goes is that in June, often the new staff get to go to their new school. So there's professional development days at the end of the school year that the new teachers, you would leave your school for a day or a morning and you would get to go to your new school and hang out with the staff. You might be a part of one of their staff meetings. You get to meet a few people. And in doing so, you get to meet, kind of maybe see your classroom. And I can remember, like, in that moment of being able to go to the new school, I was sort of hyper aware that I was shifting back into a larger school context, that there would be resources more readily available. Prior to that, it was like a very much like a single school. So the program that I was in coming out of was with suspended and expelled students. We were on school property, but in kind of an independent school within the school system, because when a student gets suspended, they have a right to an education, but they can't be on their campus, home campus often. So we were very much an island where if we needed something, we couldn't just go to the big school to get it. Like we had got mail there, but if we had staff meetings, it was done centrally. If we needed to collaborate with our team, it had to be done centrally. It wasn't all there for us. And in doing so, we started to realize that distance created lag when we needed resources. Like it was challenging for us to get the things that we needed. Only because of the timing of it. It had to either be sent or couriered, or we had to wait till our staff meeting. So when I got into the school and I got to meet the team that I would be working with, we started to talk about how much a part of the whole school, the ASD, the community classes were. And I'm slowly creeping up to your question about seasonality here. I've wondered in the past, and this is me observing from a distance, how considered, how capable a school is to map out the involvement of community classes, which could be an autism group, it could be a DD, developmental disabilities. It could be a learning strategies classroom. So some of these classes, it could also be a classroom that specializes in complex needs. So the ones that I think in the general sense of discussion in education, they may be considered to be on the fringe. When they're a part of a whole and in a larger school, what sort of discussions, planning, plotting are in place to assure that kid still benefits from any sort of a celebration, any sort of an event in the school, any sort of big picture item that's meant to harmonize the school and bring everyone together. Now, I will say the school that I'm at, we're fluid. We move through the halls, we connect with other students. And when I say we, I mean, let's say the special education department, our students that we serve, and the school as a whole. My observations yesterday with the how well that played out is on days when you have special schedules, and special schedules change the flow of the timing of the day. So you might have shorter. So in high school, we have there's five periods in the day for us. So there's two teachable periods and then a lunch and then two teachable periods. So yesterday they did compressed, they sort of shortened the period so that they could bulk up for an end of the day all school assembly. And in doing so, by getting rid of period four, it changed how we did our structure of scheduling in the ASD programming. And one of the things that is a, a compulsory component there, one of the things that we're always trying to do is maintain that structure. Like we're holding the schedule, predictability, comfort, anxiety, trying to head off other sort of behaviors that might be a part of the whole kid as well. So yesterday with the schedule changing, it didn't even matter that in my classroom, the schedule was still the same as far as the order of operations that we went through. It was the fact that the periods were coming out of order. And then we come out of that into a lunch that wasn't in the normal time slot. And then that goes into this big assembly at the end of the day. So it was a whole lot of little bits of friction that throughout the day, I was aware of just that energy. And I was aware of whether or not the day was going to be a day where we're going to have to be communicating with parents, like that it was going to be a good day. So that's sort of a new space of observation that I've been aware of, is like how well the community classes can access these big picture events. That was my thing.
I want to ask you directly.
Yeah.
Now that you're teaching, you call it a community living classroom. Is that what you call it?
It's a community classroom. It's a community classroom.
Predominantly ASD students.
It's in every student. So I'm the, like the in-house. So we, in high school, they do what's called, for community classrooms, they do something called integration periods. So integration periods would be where the students get out of the actual homeroom that they're in for most of the day, and they might go take art class, they might take phys ed. It's almost anything that you could think of. And depending on the configuration, they could be K-coded, which, you know, in essence means that it's not a credit bearing, it's an experiential credit that the kid or class subject that the kid is participating in. For my students, the course that I'm delivering, the curriculum that we're playing with, the activities that we're doing, it is K-coded. So it's tied to, I use the kind of the grade 11 hospitality course, which has expectations. I use that as a framework of reminders about what I can do. But I have the freedom within that to differentiate and structure lessons according to the kid, where they at. So when I say the living part of it, I think I might have inadvertently blended two different terms that could mean something more. Community classroom, which is the identifier for the grouping or say cluster of the students that I serve. It's the independent living skills that I'm trying to develop. So these students are eventually, what I'm trying to keep in mind is, how do I get them job ready? And what ways can I get them job ready? And I just happen to be using culinary as a vehicle for that. So teaching them how to cook, how to sort of, we do laundry, we do measurement and recipe and portioning and bagging and all this kind of stuff that the tasks that I'm working them through look like something that if they end up getting some work, cool, they could get paid for it, have some independent skills if they end up living in some sort of supportive environment outside of the home, a group home possibly, and just maybe at home set them up so that they can cook with their family. So that's the picture. I don't talk much. I started to realize as I'm given the shape, I don't talk much about the day-to-day, right? I don't. I'll work on that. I'll start sharing more.
I love hearing about it because...
Yesterday was pasta and sauce. That was what we did. Pasta and sauce with fresh basil. That's what we made. And I had them make like cheese bread on a baguette. So that was what the cooking lab was.
So when do you hit chicken primavera? When does that happen?
My dad. I did what I didn't share about that story. So that was just, you know, folks, quick story about my dad's perception of what a chicken primavera was. I never got to the end of it, which was how pissed off he would be when it wasn't the thing that he was looking for. So when it wasn't the white sauce with the grilled chicken and the specific list of vegetables, came with a red sauce and like two vegetables. He's like, this is not a chicken primavera. I'm like, dude, no restaurant. It has like the template for a primavera. Ease, bud.
I love it. Is your dad still alive when you were a chef?
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's stories there. Because when I was working in downtown Toronto, he was still working downtown Toronto too. So dude would like, he just glowed because he would come into the restaurant and he would get to come in the kitchen and he would get to sort of see his son doing a thing. And sort of, it's a little bit like being able to see behind the curtain. You know, everyone goes to restaurants for the most part, or you go to some place where you're going to get food and you think to yourself, geez, I wonder what it looks like behind there. Like, what are they reaching down into? What's that noise? I would bring him right in the kitchen, walk him front to back. And he's just cruising through there like a VIP. He'd love it. He loved it.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we've talked much about dad moments. You know what I mean? Like
our dads?
Yeah. And just moments where you can make a connection to how we act with our kids now. Like I've had some moments lately where I catch myself telling my boys how proud I am of something they had done or something they had said, or just a moment in time where it's like this extreme pride, you know? It gets me thinking every now and again about my dad. Not too much, because it's funny how time flies. And when you're in the moment and you're trying to parent, or you're not doing a very good job of parenting, my head doesn't go to what my parents did. I'm just trying to get through the moment. So it was great to hear you talk about your dad yesterday in the story of the primavera. I think that's hilarious. I'll share a funny story about my dad, and then I think we got to cut it off because of the time. But so I remember one of the happiest days of my dad's life was when I got into university, but more so like my first day of going to university. So it was like the first day of school all over again, but it was better because I didn't start at 8:30 kind of thing. I started at 1, and I could drive myself and do whatever I wanted. So I told my dad that the first course of my day was a course that had different sections. It had 4 sections, and I was one of the sections. And then one of the sections was recorded and then broadcast on the university's cable channel. And the cable channel was on like Rogers Cable. So anybody who had Rogers Cable in Ottawa or the surrounding area could watch lectures at the university. And what happened was, like a couple of days later, it's like the evening and my dad's in the room and I'm flicking the channels and I stop and I'm like, hey, dad, like that's my class. I'm in that class. I was there the other day at 1, and they record it and then they play it today at, you know, 8 p.m. for all the people who do it on TV and not go to the class. And my dad's like fascinated, like just fascinated. And the pride beaming off of him that his son's in university, like a really big deal for him. And then sometimes the camera would veer off the professor and show the students. It turns and it shows this one student. He's sitting in his auditorium seat and his feet are up on the other seat. My dad is appalled.
He lost it.
He did. What is going on? Why does that kid have his feet up? The kid, right? We were kids. It didn't feel like that at the time, but we were kids. He was dying because his whole idea, it's like your dad's chicken primavera. It's got to come a certain way. It's got to look a certain way. My dad's picture of a university student is, you know, wearing the button-up shirt, sitting in the chair, taking notes, and like giving the professor every single minute of their attention. I'm like, no, dad, that's not what I saw. I mean, he's like, did you do that? I'm like, no, I didn't put my feet up anywhere. I just sat there and listened. You know, my dad didn't know I was scared to death. I'm like, okay, I'm here. I got to do well. I got to listen. I got to take notes. And it's awesome because I didn't even know how to take notes. Nobody prepared me for university.
Me neither. Nobody
prepared me for anything. It's Oh, now you're going to get me going and we can't. But anyway, you know, I'm sure people were delighted in the fact that all these new students didn't know what to do. And, you know, some either swim or some sink, whatever, who cares, which is for another episode. But I just remember the first time.
Let's do that. Just to jump in. Let's do a, let's do a, like just a, that first year. Maybe that's, maybe we could do that one next year before the new year. If we can, are we going to, if we're going to be here next week, but our next episode, all the messes that we kind of stepped in first year. Right. Everything that I didn't know, that I should be doing in first year university.
And we can even, if we want to be brave, we can even drop first year teaching.
Oh.
Because I've got some doozies there that I learned in my first year that I'm holding on to with dear life. but anyway, I wanted to throw that in. So shout out to our dads.
Shout out to dads. Merry Christmas, dads.
Primavera. Now, what would have been even worse is if there was a dude sitting there with his feet up on the chair eating fake Primavera. Our dads would have lost it together.
I love that. I love that. It just, it shows a little bit of that lockdown thinking that happens. And I felt for my dad too, right? Because it was like his favorite dish. But yeah, he wasn't having it. And there was nothing I could do to console him. And I mean that quite literally. Like he was seriously bothered. And the funny thing, and this is the dad part of it, and maybe this has happened to you, is that he did it again and again. Like he, you know, there was one place that I knew that he had this particular dish, and it's not like I was trying to target it. So we always went there, but it was actually the place where I did my apprenticeship that he first had this dish. So, and when I was no longer living in Guelph, you know, shout out to La Fontana, Giovanni, my chef and Maria, like he had the same kind of treatment whenever he came there, he really enjoyed it. So he had this dish that was wrapped up in his son's, like future, like his son's going to become a chef. My son just cooked for me. I'm sitting in this restaurant. Like he's sort of dreaming the dream of maybe I'm going to open my own joint. Like he's into it. And that's what's all wrapped into the Primavera. So as I'm seeing, you know, 5-6 years later, we're at some restaurant in Toronto and he's staring down at his dish. I was like, dude's going to start crying. Like it's just, this is not according to the memory. So I felt for him, but it was funny. He did it again and again. And ain't that the epitome of being a dad, right? You're just like, keep making that mistake. So
all right, dude, well, our time has come to an end
on all right, man.
Episode 14 of season 2 Decoded Podcast.
Can I throw you a random just before we go?
Throw me a random.
Would you want to go to Mars? It's so random.
No, it's not. It's, well, yes, it is random. And the answer is yes.
Okay.
And it's funny that you'd ask that because my wife and I have talked about this. And whenever we see people who are like vying to go to Mars or like put me on the ship, I want to go. My wife is like, who would do that? Who would leave here knowing they're never coming back and that they're going to die in space? And I'm looking at her like my hands up, like I'll go. Like I don't want to go, but I mean that I would love to go to space because secretly, well, it's no longer a secret. I would have loved to become an astronaut, but it's just not in the cards, right? Like, right. I am, if somebody said to me, hey, you have the opportunity to become an astronaut and go to space, are you in? The answer is yes. Well, it's yes if I don't have to consider my family or anything else, but yeah, it's yeah. Put me on that ship and send me up there. And my wife and I have had this conversation. She's like, what's the draw? I'm like, to go where nobody's gone before, like to check something out that's never been checked out before. There's something about that I like. You?
I'm conflicted. This is, you know, here's the way that it plays out. Sorry, okay, I'll see if I can wrap this like in 1 minute. So the drive home yesterday, I'm listening to podcasts. And the one podcast, I'll send you the link, lays out basically that all the technology is ready to go. Like they talk about how food, water, shelter, oxygen, one more thing are kind of like the things that they need in order to be on Mars. And it was a fascinating podcast because it said, one person said, within the next decade, within the next decade. And there was a whole bunch of things that popped up, and it just got me thinking. It got me thinking about it. Actually, here was the leap off point. You and I, when we parted ways last night, we were talking about modern learning and how often we talk about technology as the accelerator to modern learning. We were sort of, you know, talking about where do we place the technology? Is it a pillar? Is it an element? Like, how foundational or fundamental is it to modern learning? And as I'm driving home, this thing about Mars pops up, and it got me thinking about, well, just you and I don't talk about space travel much, which is no biggie, but it just got me thinking about kind of future learning and what we're aiming for. So I started to think about what am I doing in my classroom to set up the possibility that my students could live on Mars. What a nutso thought, eh? Like, what am I doing with my students right now to prepare them for life on another planet? And it just became more ridiculous that I thought about it. And in some part of my teacher brain's like, oh, great, one more thing, another initiative we have to deal with. We got literacy, numeracy, and now life on Mars. But I started to crack myself up because then I started to think about how initiatives come down the pipe. And what if your school board took that on as far as modern learning? We're no longer going to look at the little screen. We're going to look at interplanetary travel, and that becomes the initiative. How are we going to prepare our students for life on Mars?
So I have to throw down now that you said that and say, wouldn't it be awesome for a school board to for their tagline to be, you know, instead of 21st century learning,
preparing for life on another planet,
extraterrestrial preparation, right? It's like the next. Forget 21st century. We're not sticking around.
Interplanetary. I think we don't quite have the equitable terms yet. I think extraterrestrial suggests something landing here. Interplanetary.
Oh, fair enough.
Preparing for life on Mars.
And that's why neither you or I are going to be directors of education.
Hey, but we just got to the fringe. Dude, but think that's... We need some other sort of like just random messy thinker on this.
We should run. You know what? Now I want to run with this. Now, okay. So listen,
life on Mars.
The next episode, let's talk about how we could prepare our students, like some ideas on what a system could do to get what we think to get kids ready to leave the Earth. Number one, seriously.
Oh, geez.
And number two, the messes we've stepped in our first year of anything. Can we do that? Can we do first year of anything? Because I think I would love to talk about my first year of university, my first year in a school, in a new school, whatever. Yeah.
I'll send you the link so you can check the podcast. It's good because it's not just singularly promoting the idea. It just lays out really, because it's the TED Radio Hour. So they pull from different TED Talks on a common theme. So this was about, moving to Mars, and it was compelling. It kept me awake, which was good on the drive home. It kept me awake. So
I'm happy to hear that.
Life on Mars.
Okay. So hopefully we'll be back next weekend, but it depends. Mm-hmm. It depends. My son's in a hockey tournament, all kinds of things going on, but you know what? We're on Christmas break. I'm on Christmas break. Yeah. You're on winter break.
No, I'm good. I was doing the Merry Christmas thing too. I'm in.
Let's find time for the next one. How about that?
Yeah, for sure. We'll do a little bit like a summer school schedule. We'll just do it on the fly and see what we can do. In short though, buddy, thanks again for hanging last night. That was wonderful barbecue and great conversation. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Enjoy Same the you. Time. Thank you.
It was a pleasure. Good times. I'm glad you could make it down. And if I don't talk to you before Christmas, Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Thank you.
And to everybody who's listening, to our four listeners, Merry Christmas and have a good one.
Absolutely.